Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Lisa Mullins.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. On the same day that the Senate Intelligence Committee released its report on the brutal interrogation techniques the CIA used against suspected terrorists, Secretary of State John Kerry was in another part of the Capitol making the Obama administration's case for the use of military force.
Secretary Kerry asked Congress to authorize military action, not just in Syria and Iraq, but for a campaign without, quote, geographic limitation, to combat ISIS, the so-called Islamic State. It's just the latest chapter in what veteran war correspondent Dexter Filkins once called the Forever War.
And our next guest says the revelations about torture and a country preparing for endless war are inextricably intertwined. Andrew Bacevich is an author and former colonel in the Army. He's a professor emeritus of history and international relations at Boston University. He's a frequent guest on this show, and he has an op-ed in the Boston Globe this week on this very subject. He joins us now. And Professor Bacevich, welcome back to Radio Boston. It's good to have you.
Thanks very much.
I'd like to start, if I could, with this Senate report on the CIA's interrogation program, which the New York Times summed up pretty strongly this way, a portrait of depravity that is hard to comprehend and even harder to stomach. Were you surprised by anything you've read in it so far?
Well, I have to say, not particularly. I mean, I don't think that the Senate report is a revelatory document. I think it's a document that affirms the truth of what has been rumored or bandied about, that as a matter of policy, the United States engaged in torture and in some very suspect other efforts to confine people.
Mm. Now, you write in your op-ed piece this week that the U.S. has been either on a war footing or at war directly pretty much consistently since 1940. What's the link between that and what we've learned in the past couple of days about torture?
Well, the argument is certainly not original with me, although I buy it, and that is that in the wake of World War II, a national security mindset really came to grip our political elites. From that mindset emerged a large apparatus, the national security state, which is committed to the proposition that national security, always in peril, must remain the highest purpose or objective of the United States of America. And this creates a situation in which, when we think about distributing resources or establishing priorities, the claims of national security always come first. Now, if you accept the proposition that we are always in imminent danger, maybe it makes sense for that set of priorities. But I'm of the belief, and I think many other critical observers are, that the national security state has tended to exaggerate threats for its own purposes.
Hmm. So is it the exaggeration of those threats that somehow make the ground more fertile for this kind of, so-called enhanced interrogation techniques, otherwise known as torture?
Absolutely, because the exaggeration of threats creates a sense of panic. In that mood of panic, then moral considerations, legal considerations tend to go by the board. It is much easier to say this in retrospect than it would have been to say it back in September and October of 2001. But in retrospect, it becomes clear that the George W. Bush administration overstated the threat posed by al-Qaeda or by terrorism, if you like, and in doing so, they exploited a particular situation to embark upon what they called a global war on terrorism, which was misguided and in other forms continues to evolve at the present moment with literally no end in sight.
Hmm. You know, you mentioned this, too, in your op-ed piece. You made note of Senator Dianne Feinstein's introduction to the report, the Senate report this week on torture. She wrote that pressure, fear, and expectations of future terrorist plots do not justify, temper, or excuse improper actions taken in the name of national security. You call that a carefully reasoned judgment, but you also say it falls short, well short, of being adequate. In what way does it fall short
of
being adequate?
Well, it seems to me that what we're seeing unfold in Washington is a fairly standard response to a scandal, and that there's going to be a certain amount of tut-tutting. There's going to be a certain amount of slapping on the hand. But I personally don't see the likelihood of any really substantial change. Were there to be substantial change, we'd have to have people like Senator Feinstein or other leaders who would begin to acknowledge that the real problem here is not simply that the CIA oversteps its bounds, but the real problem here is that we have persuaded ourselves that there really is no alternative except to engage in quasi-permanent war.
Hmm. You know, it's interesting talking about the response of Senator Feinstein. Today, John O'Brien, CIA director, acknowledged problems during the interrogation program, but he said that he fundamentally disagrees with the Senate report's conclusion that waterboarding and enhanced interrogation techniques didn't produce valuable intelligence. But, you know, I think the key sort of takeaway from his press conference today was, my fervent hope is that we can put aside this debate and move forward. So that sort of sounds like that gives voice to your fear pretty well, it sounds like.
I think exactly right. And that's why, you know, we get to these questions of, how will accountability be asserted, and will it go beyond simply rhetorical complaints or speeches on the Senate floor? It seems to me that it's quite unlikely that it'll have any that it'll go beyond that.
Andrew Bacevich, I'd like to ask you this, and this is a hard question to ask only because it almost seems unfair, but to what extent does the broader public bear some responsibility for this? And this is where this question is coming from. We were looking at a polling information from the Pew Center. A large majority of Americans were opposed to torture, even in the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks. But something has shifted since then. Since 2010, a majority of Americans say they're okay with torture. So support has only grown since then. And I'm wondering why you think that is, and if that is somehow, you know, linked to where we find ourselves today.
Well, that's a good question, and I certainly don't have a very good answer. But to speak in very broad terms, we are a people that has a short attention span. You know, Americans are preoccupied with things in their day-to-day life, and I don't think that very many people reflect very deeply and seriously about the circumstances in which we find ourselves, the circumstances meaning of more or less perpetual war. And in reinforcing this absence of serious reflection is the fact that few of us are directly affected by the permanent war. The reliance on a professional military means that the vast majority of Americans don't really have any personal stake in the wars that we're engaged in. The fact that the government doesn't require the American people to pay for the wars waged in our name, they don't raise our taxes, they don't require us to sacrifice, again, reinforces this distance from the reality of the wars that in which we are engaged.
Yeah. Very quickly, Andrew, basically, we just have a few seconds left, but it seems like one of the challenges here is this massive security state, the NSA, the CIA, 16 intelligence agencies, all sort of continuing to work in a way, you know, under their own momentum. What's it going to take to change the way things are done in the national security arena if change is what has to happen?
Well, again, you keep posing good questions. I don't have adequate answers.
Well, you've got some pretty good answers.
I would even add an additional element of complexity. It's not just these executive departments, but it's the Congress itself. Mm. If you've been paying attention to the negotiations about the new budget, we've got the Congress adding weapon systems, weapons purchases beyond those that the Pentagon itself has been asking. So it's not simply DOD, the CIA. It's also the Congress itself.
All right. Well, that's Andrew Bacevich. He's a professor emeritus at Boston University, the author of numerous books on American foreign policy. You can find a link to his latest Boston Globe op-ed on torture and the consequences of permanent war at RadioBoston.org. Andrew Bacevich, it's always a pleasure to have you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Stay with us. Coming up, music. We look back at the music and the antics of the Wu-Tang Clan's Old Dirty Bastard. I'm Lisa Mullins.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.